This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 149. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Berners. Well, Berners, we're a man down this week. Mark Garraway is away on holiday in the West Indies, enjoying the sunshine and the cocktails.
He's chilling, man. He's chilling.
Yeah. So it's not a bad life being him, I don't think.
International cricket guru, serving cricketers around the globe.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Has Sky Wheel Travel.
Apparently with ex-England captain Vaughan and seam bowler Hoggard on a bit of a coaching jaunt, apparently.
Yeah, sounds quite good. So I'm sure he'll give us an update on what's going on with that when he gets back next week. What have you been up to, Berners?
Been attending the cricket resource shows. We had three shows, so just ending in Leeds last week up in Headingley, which was good. We had good attendance up there and some very interesting cricket anoraks in attendance, and also really? Some very interesting leads for Pitch Vision. So that was all good. And been down at Surrey, down at their Guildford base this week, just getting them going on the Pitch Vision system. So they're going to be putting a few of their academy boys through their paces on the bowling side of things, and just using the Pitch Vision system as a platform to be able to put some frameworks in place to monitor and track how they do in pre-season.
Well, yeah, I mean, Pitch Vision's spreading its wings, and I was going to say tentacles, but that's the wrong word, isn't it? It's spreading its wings, and we're in all kinds of high performance places now, aren't we? I mean, what with Surrey having one, and a couple of other places that are putting Pitch Vision into the floor. It's an exciting time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We're cracking with Lords, obviously being involved with the home of cricket and the MCC there is a massive turning point for us. And like you say, the ability for us to now put them in permanent venues. So the Cricket Asylum up in Yorkshire, great proof that, the system can be used in those kind of venues in every single net lane and totally rejuvenate that whole environment. So brilliant to see the data filtering through there. We also had a very funny video which was posted to YouTube where one of the players had actually caught his father bowling in one of the net lanes using our video camera, so the father didn't realize he was being filmed, goes through the delivery crease, totally loses his footing and plunges into the side netting, which I'm sure we can get it up and running. Maybe we'll post it on Twitter and allow some of our listeners to have a little bit of a chuckle to that one.
Yeah, I'll put that up on our Twitter, and I'll also put it up on the site, on the pitchvision.com site, so you can have a look at, let's say, using Pitch Vision knocked at the performance end of things. Well, in the world of cricket this week, I wanted to talk about something that comes up pretty much all the time at every single level, and that is the role of selection in cricket, because the media always talk about selection. No matter what team you follow, selection is always something which is high on people's minds. But also, if you've played any kind of club cricket, you've captained at any kind of level of club cricket, where you've got more than one side, then the selection committee meetings go long into the night over one or two players very often. So I really wanted to talk a little bit about selection and the type of things that happen around selection. And of course, this week we were talking about Shane Watson, who has had all kinds of roles in the Australian side. He's gone from a middle order batsman who bowls at 90 miles an hour to a top order batsman who didn't bowl at all, to an opener who can give you a few overs of gentle swing bowling. So I guess what I was thinking about there was, how do you, when you've got somebody like that, how do you best decide what's best for them? I mean, Berners, have you ever Have you ever captained a team where there's been that kind of a problem?
Not really captain the team, but I have seen players literally change, the dynamic way they play cricket through a number of years. Maybe they've changed their style of batting, or like you say, they're a batsman who's suddenly developed into having a bowling role in the side. But I think it is very useful to have, players that can adapt to different situations and have guys in the locker that essentially aren't picked for bowling or for batting, but can step up to the plate. Because if you have those kind of predefined roled players, your Alistair Cooks, you pretty much know what you're going to get from them on the tin. Whereas, you could chuck someone like your Watson the ball, not knowing that it could well be his day's conditions might suit. He might end up, tickling a little fifer when at the start of the play and during the selection process, you hadn't anticipated quite that his influence on the game could be quite so much.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting at club level, isn't it? Because I think often you'll get a player who bats a little bit and bowls a little bit, and they go through a rich run of form in one or the other, and people start to see them as that role. Oh well, he's a batsman, and maybe he'll give us a couple of overs, and then he loses a bit of form with the bat, and he starts picking it up a little bit with the ball. So it can cause a kind of a follow-on problem then for the rest of the team that you pick. I mean, if you've got a guy who's a very good batsman and he bowls a little bit, and suddenly he's batting very badly and he's bowling a lot more overs, then you've got your guy who has come in from the second team and he's batting it. He's a batsman, but he's having to bat at eight because your batting lineup is so strong. And he's looking at it and thinking, "Well, hang on a minute, this guy who's batting at four and he's bowling 10 overs every Saturday afternoon." Is getting a bit more of a go than me, and that's not very fair.
But
So,
I guess you could argue, though, you'd still be better off with that guy in the team with whatever role he was playing. If he was being successful with bat or ball, you'd probably still want him in there with the payoff that potentially one in five games he's going to do a bit of both and he's going to score you a 50 and get a little threefer.
Come now for the interview section on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. And this week I'm joined by Chief Coach and Director of the Karnataka Institute of Cricket, Irfan Sait. Welcome to the show, Irfan.
Thank you very much.
So what is a you run a very busy cricket academy in Bangalore in India. What is a typical day like for you?
Well, we begin at 6:30 in the morning. We have a group session in the morning until 8:30. We have a short break of about 30 minutes, and then we begin with a one-on-one coaching, one-to-one coaching with different boys. I am fortunate to have many overseas players coming in, and lucky to have a lot of boys coming from all over the country. While the local lads are in school and college with their education, this outstation and the overseas boys keep us busy until 3:30. And then after a short break, we begin again at 4 p.m. and the session goes on until 9 p.m. This session is a squad, a group session. We have a lot of netting activity. And then after sunset, under the lights, from 6:30 until 9 p.m., we have yet another session of one-to-one coaching.
So that's quite the packed day. What type of cricketer do you have coming to the institute? Ages and skill levels and that kind of thing.
Let me tell you, I have ages from 6 years onwards until the first-class cricketers, age no bar. We have a very, very good team of coaches who handle different age groups. I mainly focus on the overall plus the first-class cricketers and the one-to-one coaching.
And you've seen a lot of players come through your academy. You've seen some people succeed, and you've got some success stories which are very well known, and you've also got players who didn't quite make the grade. So what would you say the important traits were for a young cricketer who wanted to become a professional, what would say be the three most important things he would need?
Well, we focus on all aspects of the game, like the technical abilities, the tactical abilities, the mental strength, the physical strength, and then perhaps ours is the only institute which also focuses on monitoring the lifestyles of the cricketers. Now, those who go through this process, if they fail in any one of these aspects, are guaranteed to fail in their cricketing careers. So, those who follow the ethics we have seen have achieved greater success.
So, how important would you put lifestyle factors down to the success of a young player? What's the important things? How should a young player live his life?
Well, initially it is like, you know, you make, they tell them the do's, of course, emphasizing the do's, and letting them know the things that they could avoid towards being a good cricketer. We give them a roadmap in which we detail that they have to focus on their academics, education, as well as the sporting activity, leaving them with very little time to seek other attractions. Like the greatest enemy today, I think, is the television and the video games. Mm-hmm. We try and keep the boys away as much as we could from these two attractions. And then, of course, we detail them by newsletters, by lecture classes, and gentle prodding, saying these are the things that a cricketer needs to do. We've got some fantastic examples from Rahul Dravid, who's a local lad from Bangalore, and Sachin Tendulkar, the cricketing icon. We tell them that these are the things that they have done, and this is what has taken them to the heights that they're enjoying today.
As a coach, what would you say your overall coaching philosophy was?
Well, going by the coaching standard, I think we need to try, personally, I try and make sure that the enjoyment is not taken away from the game, because if the cricketer is enjoying, he's not going to persevere, he's not going to continue for too long, because the world as it goes today has many, many attractions, and boys and girls of very young age could easily lose out if they're not enjoying what they're doing. Therefore, we tell my team of coaches, which is, I have about 40 coaches working under me, mm-hmm. We tell them to make sure that each one is getting equal importance, address them by their name, and make sure that they're getting what they're coming here for. Besides just hitting the ball and bowling a few balls, I would like them to be enjoying every session that they attend here.
Now, you've coached overseas as well, haven't you? You've coached in Australia and in England. What would you say the main differences were between those countries in terms of the young players?
Well, look, when I'm in England or away from India, I keep my mind open to be as much as a student or trainee as the boys and girls that I coach, because there's so much that we can learn from each other. Now, when I see the overseas boys training, they are so different. In a way, I can say that the overseas cricketers have a more professional attitude as compared to the Indian lads. Whereas I find the Indian lads a lot more skillful by way of flexibility and kind of things. Whereas the English lads and the Australian lads, I think, are stronger, both in mind and body. And it's a different experience. I would hate to compare the two, the Indians and the overseas cricketers, but it's a different experience each time, and each one of them has a different quality which we need to appreciate as coaches.
And interestingly, at the moment, with England doing poorly in subcontinental conditions, and also India struggling in both English and Australian conditions, it seems that there's quite a big gap between those different parts of the world. But you've seen players come to your academy from England and other parts of the world. How what do you see the fundamental differences, and how can countries get better at playing away in unfamiliar conditions?
That's a very, very good question. Now, if Indian batsmen are struggling to play the rising ball, I think the blame should go to the kind of pitches, the nature of wickets that we had here in the country. And we cannot blame the curators, because the nature of wickets is actually governed by the atmospheric conditions and the soil composition. Now, I, at my academy, have been trying very, very hard to try and make those bouncy wickets. Now, we have adopted some different surfaces, and as well as playing on concrete wickets with the plastic balls which bounce a lot.
Yeah.
My boys and girls have been training hard now, and hopefully, I mean, anything would take a little time, and given time, in a couple of years' time, I'm sure, we will be able to produce cricketers from India who will play the bouncing ball. And moreover, we are blessed with the facilities of bowling machines, which can bowl at great pace, and the boys and girls are getting used to the speed as well as the bounce. I can't say the same thing about the English conditions, because half the time the wickets are quite wet, and to reproduce a turning track in England could be so much more difficult as compared to the conditions that can be reproduced in India. I suggest that England and Australia start using rough surfaces for training, as opposed to the indoor carpeting.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're training on indoor surfaces, I think the coir matting that we use, the coconut coir matting that we use in India, would be of great help to English coaches.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to get an insight from an Indian perspective. And so if people wanted to find out more about coming to your academy, whether they're listening in India or whether they're listening in England or South Africa or Australia, how can they find out more information about coming to your academy and experiencing that kind of intense coaching that you do?
Well, I'm available. They can log on to my website, which is www.kioc.net. And I'm also always round the clock available on the internet, and I would be very happy to answer queries to anybody from overseas who would be interested in getting in touch with me. My email ID, cricketkioc@hotmail.com. And then, of course, I would also be happy to share information on telephone.
Well, it's really good to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time today, Irfan.
Thank you, David. Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Moving on with the show, it's time to cover off your questions for this week. And every week, of course, the best two questions have our panel go over the solutions to their problems. And hopefully it'll help those people become better cricketers or better cricket coaches. And the best one of those two questions wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out more about that by going to pitchvision.com/academy. So, Bernard, you picked out a couple of questions this week. Let's mull over a couple of answers as well.
Yeah, we got a first question from Anwar. He's been handed the reins of school captaincy. However, got a couple of new players that don't quite have the experience of some of the other guys. So he's just wanting a few tips and tricks as to how he can best handle and manage those new players.
Man management is one of those things where you can talk about it until the cows come home. I mean, there's been so many books written on managing people in any situation, not just on the cricket field. Cricket especially, I think the secret to handling a team and getting the best out of people, especially if they've got low experience, is to build up that that level of trust with them, that you know what you're doing. And with inexperienced people, I think you need to, if you're quite experienced and they're inexperienced and they recognise that, then I think you need to be confident enough to do some handholding and say, this is what we're going to do. This is your particular role in the team. I want you to focus on doing that as best as possible as you can and nothing else. and together we'll work together to create a solid team where everybody trusts each other to try as hard as possible to fulfill that particular role in the team. And then that way, if, say, for example, you've got an opening batsman who's a bit of a blocker, but they do a good job every week of seeing off the new ball, so then your more attacking batsman can come in and smash it around at the end of the innings. Make sure that everybody understands what that role is for that particular person, including that person, and say to them, look, don't worry about if you're batting slowly, because your job is to stay there, rotate the strike as much as you can, and then when the new ball is gone and the lesser bowlers are on, then maybe you can try and attack him a bit more, and if it doesn't come off, then well, we've got our attacking batsman to come in after you.
Yeah.
I think trust is the really important thing, and trust comes from building up roles that everybody understands what to do. There's a couple of other little things I would suggest as well, which again really are about building up trust as much as possible. Making sure that everybody feels like they are fielding as a team. It's not an fielding isn't an individual thing. Everybody is doing one job to help the bowler, and your particular position that you're fielding in, that is what you're doing, is helping the bowler bowl a maiden or helping the bowler take a wicket. So make sure that you're getting fielders to talk to each other. Make sure that everybody knows what the bowler is trying to do at any particular point, so they're aware of if maybe the batsman take quick singles or something, you can cut that off. And really, that is done by drilling as much as possible, for getting as many fielding drills in as possible, where everybody's working together as one to do one thing.
Yeah, when you watch the Aussies, you watch what happens when one of their boys bowls a maiden. You'll have the guy from third man, he'll run up and he'll give him a pat, and they'll run him from all over the field and they'll give him a pat on the shoulder after he's finished that over and go back to their other positions. That's a proper galvanised team. That is when all the other 10 are realising that he's done something and they're going up to communicate their goodwill towards him. I mean, that's fantastic, I think, when you see that.
He's done his job, hasn't he? He's done his job, and everybody's recognising that he's done his job. And it's not false. It's real. It's genuine, yeah.
And it also shows how active you can be in the field, to run 80, 90 yards to go and congratulate one of your teammates in between an over. It's really not that much work, but guys will just trudge off to their next, their new fielding position. Make sure you make an effort, go up there, because it'll pump him up. He'll think, blimey, these guys are up for this, and then he'll run in the next over and try and emulate what he's just done. So I think it's a great way to galvanise teams, is that whole interaction when the over's over, to be bouncing around. And it's fearful for the batsman as well, because it looks like there's 11 of you against two out there, which is what it is, and you can really get on top of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So just to summarize that question, I would say make sure that you've got really, really strong team roles. Make sure that people trust each other, back each other, and reward success. And don't be afraid, as captain, if you're more experienced than the rest of the team and they recognize that, don't be afraid to hold their hand and say, this is what we're going to do now. And then eventually they'll start sussing it out for themselves.
Okay, next question from Naveen. He's an off spinner and he's got a peculiar problem as far as he's concerned, that he bowls very well to good batsmen, reputed and skillful batters to throw into the mix as well. However, when he comes across that less skilled tail end whacker, it all goes wrong. Full tosses, short deliveries, and he totally loses his line. So he's just wondering if we can give him some advice about kind of being able to bowl consistently to varying batters throughout the innings. What do you reckon, coach? Sounds like he gets hit for six and he loses the plot a little bit.
Well, of course, especially at club level, the tail ender, there are two types of tail enders. There's the guy who blocks everything, and there's the guy who blocks one, smashes one, blocks one, smashes one, pretty much. I think you probably agree with that, wouldn't you, Bonus?
Definitely. I try to do that, but I end up blocking everyone.
There is a certain mentality to bowling to guys like that, because it's very off-putting if you've got a guy at the other end who's just having a swish. You think to yourself, he's not playing properly here, I'm going to have to do something different. So it, there is definitely a skill, and some people can do it very, very well, and some people really, really struggle. And quite good bowlers really, really struggle. I think probably the reason that it happens is that you kind of lose the basic idea that you have to bowl at the stumps. You don't have to do anything clever to get a tail ender out. You just have to bowl at the stumps. Because there's a fair chance that they're going to miss one at some point if you bowl every ball at the stumps. You really need to keep your cool and think to yourself, I'm just going to do what I know I can do. I've got the ability to do it. I'm not going to do anything clever. I don't need to bowl any deuceras or big ripping off breaks or, bowl somebody through the gate or anything brilliant like that. All I'm going to do is bowl the ball so it pitches on off stump and it's hitting middle and off. Or maybe hit your middle and just as an off spinner, and just bowl six balls. Yeah, bowl six balls at the stumps.
Hit line and length, bowl your stock delivery, and like you say, he'll make the mistake. You just keep putting it there. If he hits you for 3 sixes, he's not going to hit a fourth one. It's going to all be over. I think people try to get a bit too clever at times against someone who they think they've got in the ball of their hand, but essentially you just want to just keep putting it there and force them to make the mistake there, because they will make the mistake, even if it takes 10 to 20 runs for them to get away first.
Exactly. And then it's just really what's going on in your head. What are you saying to yourself as you stand at the top of your mark? Are you thinking, "Oh God, it's another tail ender who's going to put me in the car park," or are you thinking to yourself, "Right, I'm just going to run up and put the ball on the spot"? It's a huge psychological difference between those two trains of thought. And if you're thinking to yourself, "Oh no, it's another tail ender. What am I going to do?" Put that thought out of your mind. And we talk many times about recognizing negative thoughts, putting them out of your mind, and then focusing on something positive, saying to yourself, okay, I'm just going to put the ball on the spot. Do that every ball if you need to. As you're walking back to your mark, think to yourself, did I put the ball on the spot last time? Yes or no? Yes, I did. I'll do it again. No, I didn't. I'll do it next time. And then keep your mind as clear from clutter as you possibly can. It's all about the very, very simple thing of hitting the stumps. Because they're going to make a mistake. Tail enders make mistakes. And all right, they'll probably once or twice in your career, someone will come off and they'll smash 50 off you, and you'll think to yourself, oh my God, what happened there? But it's just luck. It's just that will happen once maybe, and then you're and that will never happen again. Not always easy though, Berners, is it? I mean, you've had your moments where you've struggled to get the ball down the other end, haven't
Absolutely.
you?
You just forget to actually let go of the ball. I think I've forgotten once to run up as well. Yeah, it's a lot of it's in the head, and it's the
Course.
usual mechanisms that we discuss, which it doesn't help that he's an off spinner, because typically they are the guys that the tail enders target as well. So you got to take the rough with the smooth. I used to play with Peter Roebuck, God rest his soul, and he used to tell me, if they hit you for six, the next ball, chuck it up a little bit higher and see if they want to hit that one. If they hit that one for six, chuck it up a little bit higher and see if they want to hit that. And that was his mentality towards it. Was okay. If you want to play like that, I'll feed you some more and we'll see how good you are. And you can keep hitting me in the car park, because I know full well that you're going to miss one, or you're going to hit one straight up in the air eventually.
Every week, one of the team gets their chance to have their rant on any subject that they like. They get a minute and no more. And they can talk about anything that they want that's getting on their wick or something that they want to highlight. And this week, it's my turn. So let's start the timer. I wanted to talk about cricket equipment, and specifically a piece of equipment that's very close to my heart, the wicket-keeping glove. And the reason why I am angry about wicket-keeping gloves this week is purely because there's so much marketing hype around a pair of wicket-keeping gloves. You can pay anything between, in the UK, 20 and £80 for a pair of gloves off the shelf, and even more for a bespoke pair. Yet they're all exactly the same. They have to be because of the very stringent regulations around wicket-keeping gloves from the MCC. So the moral of the story here, really for me here, is that When you're buying wicket-keeping gloves, you have to really go and test them. Put them on, see how they feel, see how they perform. Don't buy them online. Don't get them from somewhere where you are not sure what they're going to be like. Because if you buy a cheap pair, you'll end up with a pair which is stiff and horrible, and they won't do the job properly. If you buy a decent pair and you test them, then you'll get something which will stand you in good stead, and hopefully for a number of seasons. And that's all we've got time for this week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But before we go, we've got a little bit of housekeeping to do. And one of those things is to pick a winner of the competition, which this week is, as it is every week, is a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Now, bonus, we had two quite good questions this week. One from Anwar about captaincy, and one from Naveen about bowling off-spin to tail-enders. So, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, both very honest questions, and I quite like that, and very relevant with pre-season looming. But I think I'm going to go with Naveen's question this week.
Congratulations, Naveen, and you can get in touch with us, and you can choose your online coaching course, and there's plenty to choose from. I think Naveen's won in the past, so he's building up a little bit of a collection there, which is always good for us to see. You can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and take a look at that yourself if you're interested. And if you want to win a prize, then you need to send your coaching question into us. And we do have plenty of questions coming in. So don't worry if it takes us a couple of weeks to get round to your question. We do get round to them all, or pretty much all of them that that we can. There's a couple which don't really contain enough detail for us to get our teeth into them. So make sure you have a little bit of detail. I mean, I think a question of please give me cricket tips isn't not going to get onto the show.
I quite like the one that says I want to play for India, help.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I mean, I want you to play for India as well, but I think I need a little bit more detail. You can send those questions into us, and bonus, you have the details on how to do that.
Yep, you can drop us an email. It's coach@pitchvision.com, or drop us a line on this telephone number. It's 020-88-167-691. We also have the global telephone numbers on the website, so feel free to drop into those as well.
Yeah, call us wherever you are in the world. We have an answer machine, and you can chat away to your problem to us, and we'll put you on the podcast, as simple as that. You can also get us through Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and if you head over to Facebook, then you can find us there if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can also do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in iTunes and find us there, subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star review, and you can check back every week, and you can get the show downloaded to your computer without having to do anything extra. And if you don't use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, find the show notes for this week, and there's a link through to the feed, so you can do it manually if you prefer. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, Coach.